Welcome to the Derek Loudermilk Show. This is episode 409 with Sally Rossiter. Today's guest, Sally Rossiter, is a teacher, healer, and channel. She's developed more than 20 metaphysical workshops, and in today's conversation, we're going to talk about applied metaphysics, especially when it relates to teaching metaphysics to kids. This is something that she and I both share in common, and so we talk a little bit in detail about specific exercises and strategies for bringing metaphysical topics to children. Sally is the author of multiple books. In her book, Evolving You, she talks about horizontal and vertical spiritual evolution. Her first book, The Path to Cosmic Consciousness, is about her time of initiation and training with Peruvian shamans. And today on this episode, Sally is going to do some live channeling for us with a special guest, Archangel Michael, coming in. So without further ado, here is Sally Rossiter. Sally Rossiter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, wonderful to connect with you. And I think where we'll start is applied metaphysics for kids. You popped up on my YouTube feed, I believe, and there's actually a couple phrases that I've been working with myself. So applied metaphysics is something, that actual term that I think about. So it's interesting that you use the same language. And then cosmic consciousness, I believe, is part of the title of your book. And that's so, yes, so interesting because my kids go to a school that's based originally on Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. And there's been 8 of these intelligences described, but I'm pushing for a 9th intelligence, which is cosmic intelligence. And so I ended up recently just giving a 2-day camp to the kids at my school. They had the opportunity to sign up during their spring break to do a metaphysics camp. We called it a Jedi camp. But I know you have a program for kids, and you know, it was a big group. It was 31 kids in total. I had them sort of split up into multiple sessions, but it was quite a lot of learning for me. And I was really just doing it to learn sort of how to talk about metaphysics and teach practices to kids. I'm just so curious what your experience is with applied metaphysics for kids.
Children. Well, Derek, I teach, I guess the journey starts with applied metaphysics for adults. And as all of that was unfolding, I became more conscious of the importance of giving the youth, the generations that are to come, the tools that they will need to cope with a world that is in a state of change. And I think a world that none of us know exactly what it's going to look like in the future. But certainly, I've always perceived tools like intuition as being extremely valuable life tools, and not things that are sort of set aside for certain people to utilize at certain times in their lives, but rather something that we can apply into our daily living. I also myself am an early indigo child. And I know the New Age applied a lot of labels to kids that have come in generationally, probably since the late 60s, mid-60s, the indigos being the first group. And I am essentially now a grown-up indigo child, although my son would beg to differ about the grown-up part of things. Having said that, the consciousness of the youth has developed and is so different than what it was, let's say, to people that were born maybe in the 1950s. It's an extraordinary shift. And it is, I'm generalizing, of course, but it is an extraordinary shift. And the world as a, at large doesn't offer the kind of support that these people are going to need going forward. So this developed into the Applied Metaphysics for Children.
Do you think you could characterize what type of support you think these children will need going forwards?
So, you know, in the past they worked a lot with IQ, and then sort of 20 or odd years ago, EQ became a big thing. And I think what you are calling cosmic consciousness, I call spiritual intelligence. And it really boils down to needing to take the five physical senses and expand them into a multi-sensory perception, so that we are not only able to utilize our hearing, our sight, our capacity to taste and feel, etc., successfully, but to expand into the non-physical experience of our senses, namely, some people would call it the psychic senses. But in doing this, open ourselves up to accessing support and additional information, you could say, that would really make life easier, I guess, is the simple way of describing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of places we could go. I'm actually, you referenced the Indigo Children. I'm not totally familiar with the different names that different sort of waves have been given to children. I know there's Dolores Cannon had sort of, through her hypnosis work, sort of said like, okay, there's these three waves. And now I think, you know, this year, maybe last year, the fourth wave starting, and potentially even people from the first wave are now incarnating again into the fourth wave. Waves of volunteers of sort of higher dimensional beings coming to anchor in frequency. yeah. Could you speak to exactly what is an Indigo children and what?
Okay. So like yourself, I'm not familiar with the sort of, the lady that you refer to and so on, but the terminologies go back a long way, probably into the 80s. And they basically refer to different consciousness that was being birthed generationally, is the simple way to describe it. So as far as I remember, it is the Indigo Children, and beyond the Indigo Children, you have the Crystal Children, I think they were coming in. And beyond the Crystal Children, they spoke about Rainbow Children. And after that, I kind of lost I lost touch with the names of the next waves. The names themselves, I believe, ascribe the type of consciousness that is being birthed. So it is not, you know, related to anything other than the indigo frequency or a consciousness associated with the indigo ray, I think they call it. And the Crystal Children coming in with consciousness that was then, I think, very multifaceted, but essentially was named the crystal consciousness and so on. Indigo children, they are quite challenging, actually, having been one. Generally, indigos don't easily fit in. They often find themselves feeling as though they don't belong. I think that is a very common factor. They also don't resonate easily with foods, and a lot of what is produced on the planet medicinally, pharmaceuticals, etc. So these are often people who struggle with allergies, who have to seek out alternative forms of medicine simply because the conventional stuff doesn't work for them. They struggle with the existing structures in the world, whether those structures are the old school sort of education systems and existing social systems, which essentially are restrictive and don't make a lot of space available for individuality and individual expression. I know for myself at school, learning through conventional methods was extremely challenging, and something that immediately was a big thing for me was that if my teacher was verbally boring, I absorbed nothing. So I was very audial in my learning mm-hmm. process, whereas I know other indigos were perhaps more experiential or more visual, etc. So learning became a very individual process. And I think even today, the type of school that you're describing that your children visit or are in, perhaps this is taken into consideration in these environments, but certainly in my day, it wasn't. And even now I see in with clients and students around me that they are struggling to acclimatize their children to environments that are not adapting to the child, but rather expecting the child to adapt to the environment. And I'm talking very much here about mainstream. Mm-hmm. One of the huge issues that comes out of this, of course, is ADD, ADHD, all these so-called disorders that children have and are very liberally medicated for. And personally, I find it a travesty. I feel as though the systems are letting the children down in situations like this. They should be trying to find ways to educate and capture those children's attention and to support them rather than expecting the child to be reduced and limited in its consciousness through medication in order to belong and fit in to the existing systems, you know?
Yeah. When did you start to become aware that you were an indigo or that you were not supposed to fit in to these structures? Or I'm just curious about your self-awareness when you were a kid.
Derek, I the terminologies really only sort of came to light probably when I was in my early 20s already. So it was the categorization and the subsequent naming of it came much later. I think for myself, I probably knew from the get-go. I was raised in a traditional Catholic environment by two amazing parents who, although they followed traditional religions, were extremely open-minded and encouraged their children to be who they were, which was fantastic. I'm very grateful for that opportunity. But even if I look at sort of going to mass around the age of 5 or 6 and on top of my voice saying to my mother, you know, why doesn't somebody tell this guy, the priest, that hell isn't real? Like, why is he going on about this? So having my own ideas around things, being born to a very intelligent and beautiful man, my father, who was raised in a Victorian setting. So he had difficulty expressing and connecting emotionally, but somehow I always felt loved by him. And finding that there were these roles. So, for example, my brothers were allowed to go fishing, and I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do because I didn't quite fit in with all the girls who were learning to cook and sew. And to this day, cooking is an act of survival, and sewing, I mean, that's a frightening thing. I guess what I'm trying to say is I never understood that there were specific roles for men and women and that I was supposed to fit into that. And I actually remember as a teenager being shocked that I wasn't allowed to go fishing with my dad and my brothers because I was supposed to be doing something else. So I guess it was there with me all along, and I was fortunate enough not to have to adapt. You know, mm-hmm. which was amazing.
Yeah, my parents sound similar to yours in that they basically just sort of yes-anded my interest. So I would express interest in something and they'd say, sure, we'll try to help you, you know, with that. And yeah. It led to me just being able to follow the natural trajectory of my interest, which I'm very grateful for.
I agree. It's an extraordinary gift to give your children, to allow them to be themselves. What a thing to do. It's incredible.
I have, so my kids now are 7, 5, and 9 months. We have a baby. Mm-hmm. And it's wild. My daughter wanted this rainbow ukulele for the last year. And she is also young and breaks things. And we were like, I think we'll just wait. And so finally we said, you can take your saved money and go to the toy store and get whatever you want. And she went straight to the ukulele stand, got that ukulele, and she's been playing it for the last 3 days, you know, nonstop, and already, you know, making up songs. And it's like, you know, that just wanted to come out and express itself. And she was like, I know what tool I need, and I'm going to get it.
And how old is she, Derek?
She's 5.
Oh.
Yeah.
What a divine age. Mm. Truly.
Yeah. So I practice, you know, my kids see me doing ceremonies, or they see me making crystal grids, or, you know, we talk about our dreams in the morning and things like that. So they are just around it. But I'm still trying to think, like, what are good practices or good ways of introducing this to children? And really, I'm expecting that, again, the children will teach me how to teach them. I'm not trying to approach it like the same way I'm going to train adults. What I found when I had these 31 kids, is that there was this whole range of how much they wanted to focus, right? Some of them were just interested in playing with their friends, and some of them really wanted to have the experiences and understand telepathy or understand blindfold reading. Those were a couple of things we did. So of course there's a spectrum of actual interest and dedication to it. I was surprised though that a lot of, even the ones who didn't seem like they were really that engaged, they were able to use their non-physical senses right away. So that was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, no, that doesn't surprise me. But Derek, before we go into this, I have a question for you that I'm dying to ask you.
Oh yeah.
Did you manage 31 children on your own?
Essentially. So the camp counselors, so it was split into different sections. So I would have at most 17 at a time, but that was a lot because those were the younger first and second grader children. And even their normal classes are not that big. I think 4 is a good size. If I was teaching, if I were to do it again, I would teach 4 at a time. Because it's hard, if everyone's asking questions at the same time, it's just impossible. Yes. So there was assistance, but they didn't have any experience. So.
Yes. Okay, amazing. Well done. Huh? That's a feat in itself, truly. The biggest group I think we worked with was 12 children, and I had other teachers with me, people I'd trained, because it is such a dedicated, like sort of focused process. They need a lot of attention. Amazing.
Yeah, so it kind of means we have to just have a lot of teachers and give them a lot of attention for this. And, you know, just like with anything, there's, if you don't get it right away, you know, dealing with the, like, am I doing it wrong? And then starting to overthink. And then that takes you out of being able to access this stuff to some degree. If you're frustrated, because it's, you know, when you have an open heart and you're enthusiastic and you're in the flow, you're getting it. But when you're like forcing it,
So you asked me About the tools.
Yeah.
So I have a son, he's 20 now, and I raised him my style, which means that I have encouraged him to be himself completely. And I've been a single mother since he was born. So I have been able to, I guess, give him a lot of dedicated attention because he's an only child. Having said that, I think he attended his first shamanic ceremony with me when he was about 10 days old. And he did not grow up with conventional religion. I had to kind of talk him through stories when he'd asked me questions about, you know, my friends are talking about Easter. What is Easter about, you know? And I'd have to tell him. But he, I think one of the most important things from not from the classes per se, because the classes are a bit different, that is a structured process. But as a parent, is working with the elements, is bringing the elements into our daily living. My background training is shamanic, and so I trained with masters from South America for the better part of 16 years. And the love of the elements and of nature is absolutely, I breathe, eat, and sleep it. So understanding the relationship, earth being connected to the body, water being connected to the emotions and creativity, air to our minds, our consciousness, and our intellect, and fire to our spirit. And bringing the elements into our lives in a tangible way, I've taught Gabriel that the earth is a living being and she is sentient, you know, and she needs to be respected and how to respect her. That you can cure tiredness through making sure that you are sufficiently hydrated, you know, and that I guess I'm giving examples of almost the sort of deeper spiritual connection to the elements, but also the very practical application of the elements into daily living. And that when we bring the elements into balance in our lives, they are, of course, they bring harmony, they bring flow, they bring abundance, you know. So that is one element of it. The other thing, I guess, that And it's like that for any parent raising a child, is that you have to walk with your child on their path and to apply consciousness at each point that they require it, and to also be their living example, you know. I don't hold with the idea of pretending to be perfect to your children. I think that's very kind of 1950s, right, where we would... You know, we were told our parents never did anything wrong. they were not seen, not heard, and just absolutely perfectly turned out all the time. Meantime, they were not. So I think being honest about who we are with our children and letting them see us as people is incredibly important as parents. Not that I'm an expert on parenting. I've fumbled my way along, just like any parent, you know. But the topic is applied metaphysics. and encouraging, especially when a person hits puberty, to have no sense of who you are at that point is detrimental. So to encourage your child to maintain or to have a sense of self by then, it is the best gift you can give them to move through puberty with, you know. You know, I channel, and one of the things that Spirit said to me, and I speak about the Great Spirit, is that when our children move into puberty, they have forgotten who they are. And it's our job as parents to remind them. And I try to figure out ways of doing that as Gabriel moves through puberty. So if, for example, he did something that was, let's say, against his nature in some way. Let's say he would act without consciousness, or he would be mean, or he would tell a lie, or something quite human. Then it would be my job to say to him, it's not like you to do that. Why are you doing that? Or why is that coming up for you? Because that's not who you are. And to literally keep that conversation, that dialogue happening, you know, to keep reminding the person of their own nature as they move through puberty. But obviously having the background groundedness in it is also unbelievably important.
Yeah, that sounds tremendously valuable to have an anchored knowing of who you are.
Yeah, exactly. Meditation, hugely important for our kids, teaching them how to meditate. I mean, even now, at the ripe old age of 20, if Gabriel has a life decision to make and he can't figure it out, my response is go meditate on it. Go and figure it out. See what is the best choice from inside of you and apply that into the world. That is conscious living, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. What your South American shaman mentors, how did they approach meditation?
So they work a lot with the elements and earth. So there are various practices that you would apply to the process, I guess, of meditation. However, I found that they are westernized. They're not Indians per se. They're not, you know, sort of indigenous people. They definitely have been exposed to cities, been educated in universities and so on. And I found that they used visualization. They used concentration, intention, basically a lot of the same tools that we would apply in our meditative process. But they do work or apply the themes of the elements into their meditation. So, for example, something simple that you can do with children is to get them to meditate on water with their eyes open, but that would be running water, to meditate with a candle flame or to stare at a fire, you know, maybe a candle flame for little children unsupervised is a bit risky, but certainly a campfire or a fire in a fireplace indoors. I think nobody sits with a fire and doesn't feel themselves drawn into it and just goes into that sort of mindless state of staring at it. You know, we can achieve the same state with water. And meditating with sound, on the sound of water, observing how water moves in a river, for example. So generally moving water is quite important. So there were many tools, many ways of applying concentration, visualization, intention, etc. In their processes, in their teachings.
And is that different than the African spirituality? I know that the Americas sort of have their, I feel like North Americans and South Americans are linked in some way with their use of the elements in the medicine wheel. And I'm curious if growing up in Africa, you could compare that.
Excuse me. There are so many different types of shamanism in Africa. Sure. So our original shamans, I guess you would have to look at the San people, the Bushmen, and they were, I say were because there are no indigenous Bushmen anymore. They are displaced and don't have their own lands anymore. A lot of the displaced Bushmen in Southern Africa have turned to alcoholism. I believe it is very similar in Australia with the displaced Aboriginals. Mm-hmm. Alcoholism is a huge issue. So going back in time, looking at what I know of their teachings from the past, they were an incredibly conscious and sentient people. I think with a lot of the indigenous people living in very natural environments, without cities, without luxury, their livelihood, their very survival was dependent on a conscious relationship with the elements and on a cooperative relationship with nature. So, for example, to be able to recognize when the rain is coming, like literally the day it is going to arrive, to be able to recognize that this eland that we've been tracking has now gone out of our reach, but if we keep going this way, the ancestors are showing us that we'll reach a river and there is fish to eat there. So it's a very their survival is very bound into their processes, which is unfortunate because for us, ours isn't. And if we had a bit more of that, I reckon we would find ourselves very quickly living more consciously in our relationship with nature. So the Sand People, I think, had a very beautiful spirituality, a very innocent spirituality. In later times, I mean, in parts of Africa, you've got forms of magic that is performed through shamanism that is literally black magic. It's blood magic. It is very dark and is comparable to the voodoo of South America, from Brazil and so on. But that is isolated. However, if I again focus on Southern Africa, I was very fortunate to count as a friend during the course of his life, Vusa Mazulu, Credo Mutwa. And I don't know if you know Credo, but he was truly one of the, they called him the High Senussi of Africa. So basically, the High Senussis are like the master shaman of the continent, right? Oh, wow. An extraordinary man. And as I say, I was privileged to count him as my friend. Anyway, Credo and I always wanted him to train me. He practiced Zulu. He was a Zulu, so I practiced a Zulu shamanic tradition. And the reason he wouldn't train me is because we both agreed that I would not be able to slaughter animals, which is very much a part of the African process, right? Mm. Is being able to offer slaughter animals for the purpose of offerings to the ancestors and so on and so forth. Whereas in the South American traditions, in Andean traditions specifically, which is the one I trained in, instead of using animal blood, they would use red wine as an offering to the earth, which is essentially both are the fruits of the earth that are being given back to the earth. And for me personally, I just was more comfortable utilizing something like wine rather than sacrificing an animal. It was a point of agreement that we understood I would not be able to do that.
Wow.
So yeah, it can be quite hectic in my opinion, you know.
It reminds me of the time I was in Indonesia and I stumbled across this midnight ceremony where they were turning on rainy season. I was actually attempting to set a world record for climbing these volcanoes consecutively. And all of a sudden I stumbled across this. There was like 10,000 people doing this midnight ceremony that even our guides didn't know about. But they were carrying pigs and chickens and goats up the volcano to make offerings, and I'm not sure if I would be able to do that either.
Yeah, no, it's just something I adore the animal kingdom, and I adore Mother Nature, and I respect other people's traditions and practices, and I would not stand and say that it's right or wrong. but I have to be able to choose for myself and recognize what resonates. And I think it is true for all of us, right? We need to be able to do that. Live our truth, I guess.
And I'm just curious, you grew up in South Africa, but is your business registered in Zimbabwe, or did you move around in Africa?
No, I was born in South Africa, and my business is still registered in South Africa, my practice.
Okay.
Although I've practiced internationally for a very long time now. I think this year my practice is actually 30 years old.
Wow.
It's almost as old as me. Yeah, I know, it's been a while. I trained though in South America, which is, I guess, a little odd. That was one of the areas I trained in, was the shamanic work. And it inspired a lot of the metaphysics, a lot of the applied metaphysics. What's interesting about, I don't know if you know this, Derek, but in the shamanic traditions globally, they have their cosmology is extraterrestrial. Their cosmology is stellar, in the stars. They all have a very similar, because I did a little bit of exploration. I'm certainly not an expert, but I did a little bit of exploration into the different schools of shamanism from different parts of the world. And they have some very common factors, the elements being one of them, and their work with the elements, their understanding that everything is energy, you know, these basic underlying truths that they were practicing 14 or 16,000 years ago, and now physics is only just starting to sort of accept that as a reality. But their cosmologies, their theory of the world and creation begins in the stars, which is fascinating, you know?
Yeah. So I also, I apprentice under a Mexican shaman, and sounds very similar. Yes. To,
amazing.
I mean, he pulls from anywhere, essentially, but you know, not just Mexican, but they call it Turtle Island, which is North America.
Yes.
And
yes.
Heart Island, which is South America, and Central, right, America is Serpent Island, I think.
I'm not sure about Central America, but I've heard of the turtle and the heart. And your shaman, well, it reminds me, of course, of the teachings of Don Juan. The books by Carlos Castaneda, right?
Exactly.
Classics. Yeah. So it's a similar kind of discipline.
Yep. Don Juan is the mentor to my mentor.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. It reminded me of that. So, well, of course, it had to be, right?
At least you got it. You tuned in there.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So that was a fun little synchronicity. And we were talking before the show about, I asked you to speak about water, and then you had already had an Instagram post scheduled about water, but it wasn't when I messaged you, it hadn't gone live yet. So I was sort of tuning into that. and you mentioned water meditation already for children to tune, yeah, into flowing water. One of my themes for the year, and one of the sort of global themes that I see for all of humanity, is like, this is a year of water, not only understanding the consciousness of water and how its role in our physical world, but also the role in, you know, geopolitics, the role in, you know, so many, yes, different ways to have water teaching us things. Mm-hmm. I'll just sort of let that be an intro. Like, what would you like to say about, what else would you like to say about water?
Sure.
Oh, and you mentioned, because right now it's the equinox as well.
Yes.
And you mentioned that's connected with this equinox.
Yes. It's the water element. So this, the March equinox, whether it is in the Northern Hemisphere, it's spring, Southern Hemisphere, it's autumn, is linked to the water element. So that was primarily why the post was going up about the water element. So water is an extraordinary, well, all the elements are extraordinary, but water has some very interesting manifestations. And when you said about geopolitics, it's interesting about, well, I guess it's a little while back now. I woke up, as I was waking up, I heard spirit speaking to me and saying to me, the waters of the world are rising. And at first I thought, you know, they're talking about flooding, what's happening, what's going on. And it was very interesting because within 2 days, the conflict between Palestine and Israel erupted. And I realized something that my teachers had taught me a long, long time ago was that it's the waters of the world that move the world. Water moves the world. And that when the waters of the world rise, it is the kind of emotional energy that has the capacity to start wars. But it also has the capacity to stop them, right? So water is a very powerful element, and yet it is also so incredibly gentle. It is a female element or feminine element, earth being the other one. And it almost sort of bridges the gap between the very physical, solid vibrations of earth and then the lighter, less tangibly accessible frequencies of fire and air, which are both masculine. And in us, obviously, it is plays a role in our physiology, in that it is related to our lymphatic system, our bloodstream, all the liquids in our bodies are connected into the water element. But more than that, we are, what is it, about 78 or 82%, that the number seems to vary, I think, depending on how hydrated a person is. But we are this huge percentage of water. So that brings us to a whole other role that water plays in our lives and within us as individuals. And that is that all psychic energy in the body travels through our water element. So you'll find that often when we are working with psychic spiritual energies, we become quite thirsty and we drink a lot, right? And water I'm talking about. Anything else that you're drinking, I don't know about that, but certainly water. So it is the vehicle that enables the psychic energies to move through us. It also is not only the vehicle for our psychic energies, but it is because we are such a huge percentage water in our bodies that we, all human beings, and again, I speak generally as a generalization, there are exceptions, but they are so rare, that we are mostly predominantly clairsentient, which means that we are feeling-based. Our strongest psychic links are through our feelings. And whether that is the feeling of, on an emotional level, you know, feeling love or, you know, having an actual emotion come up in relation to our psychic energy, or whether it is our hair standing on end, so literally sensation, these are both governed by or classified under clairsentience, which is predominantly water-based, or it is because we are water-based. I've been teaching people to work with their intuition for a very long time, for decades, and I have exercises that we do in the classroom where people are able to ascertain what their strongest psychic senses are at the onset. Eventually, as we consciously work with our psychic energies, they will all develop. all our psychic senses will ultimately become open, expanded, and active if we focus into them. But initially, in the initial stages, the sense that is most predominantly available to the most people is clairsentience, and it is because we are so predominantly water in our physical bodies and in our elements. It is also, there's so many things I can tell you about water, Derek. Tell me when to stop, okay?
This is great. This is, that's, yeah. I do want to come back to, I know that you've brought so many of these exercises. So I want to just put a pin there and we can talk about some of the practices and stuff. But yeah, please keep going about.
Okay. Water. So one of the other big things that the water element does, and this is within us, but it is also in the physical environment, is that water enables us to access the subconscious. So within us, it is when we follow a feeling and we go deeper with it that we come to the underlying pattern or the subconscious energy beneath the feeling. In other words, let's say I feel angry, and if I follow my anger and I go backwards with it and I go, okay, so why am I feeling angry? And I go deeper with it, I'll understand what the underlying pattern is that is causing anger in me. Okay? So that's in a literal sense in ourselves, but from a shamanic perspective, a physical body of water, still water, like a lake, a dam, that type of thing, is actually the place through which we can direct our consciousness to move into the subconscious. And so this would enable us to do things like access the Akashic records and so on. It's very interesting. Water is an extraordinary element. It is the element that governs creation. It is on a literal sense. It is in water that they say, you know, that the first cells start to form, and from that your first kind of weird lizard thing crawls out of the pond, you know, having evolved from slime or whatever it is. But it is in water that this happens. And then, of course, within us, again, it is our, as women, we are able to gestate in the water element and literally bring life forth through the water element. But it is also the source of our creativity, whether we are male or female. It is through the water element that we bring forth our creativity and express it into the world. In the Andean tradition, they attribute certain qualities to the different elements, and the quality associated with water is silence. So it's in silence that everything is born. If you think about the gestation, the human gestation process, it is in that silence that life is being made manifest, created, and so on. It essentially goes back to the void, you know, and the onset of life coming from the void and so on. But it's an extraordinary element. Water is amazing, as are all the elements. I personally am in love with all of them. Mm-hmm. They're amazing.
I had a question about creativity. Actually, you mentioned I always associated the fire element with creativity.
Mm-mm. I'm going to say something to you now that is not meant to be offensive, but the feminine is the source of creativity in this world. Everything in this world is birthed through the feminine, not the female, the feminine. But if we look at it in relation to male and female, even male children are born to females. Yes. So everything is birthed through the feminine in this world, and it is the water element plays the pivotal role. The fire element is associated with spirit. So that is your divine spark, you could say. That is the way we look at the elements shamanically will determine or tells us a lot about them. So when we observe an element, let's take fire as an example, it always burns vertically, ultimately. Yes, if there's wind, it'll move around, but essentially it always burns vertically. So the fire element is the element that is responsible for our evolution. It is how we evolve and ascend is through fire. And if you go back to early man, you look at suddenly things start to change, right? When old the fire comes along and we learn how to cook and heat things and create sacred fire and so on and so forth. But the fire is associated, I would say, if you had to look at the gestation or the creation of a human being, that would be this the spark of inception. Sorry, conception. Mm-hmm. That would be the role of the masculine coming in and actually initiating that process. But it is through water that the creation happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And maybe that's why you associate it with fire.
I guess I see it as like when inspiration strikes.
Yes.
Then that's yes, like the...
That is that descending of consciousness. Divine consciousness. Definitely. Fire is fire.
Fire is fire.
Very powerful, beautiful. Yeah, they say that the quality they associate with the fire element is today.
Hmm.
Fire enables us to go beyond where we were. It's the alchemist.
The quality of fire is today?
To dare.
To dare.
D-A-R-E, dare. Yeah, sorry, it's my shocking South African accent.
I was sort of, I thought you were saying like, it's to be ultra present, you know, like be in the now. But to dare. Mm.
Dare, yeah, dare.
Yeah, there you go. That sounds pretty American. Yeah. Dare.
Yeah, dare. You know, it's interesting living in Portugal. Do you know that the Portuguese speak English with American accents? Because these kids are learning American and the teachers are learning English, all of them, from watching television and movies.
Mm.
And they're watching English shows that are coming out of America.
God, I saw the funniest.
So you're going to the supermarket.
I saw the funniest clip the other day. It's of maybe like an Afghani person, some Central Asian person speaking in an American accent, but he doesn't know English. So he's just speaking gibberish, but in an American yes. accent. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's not saying anything, but he sounds like a cowboy. It was so amusing.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So we had talked.
Interesting things. Yeah. Sorry.
Yes. We had talked a little bit about, showcasing some channeling. Is that something that you'd be up for doing?
Sure, we can do that. Yeah. And would you like to choose the subject matter?
I have a lot of different subjects.
You had originally mentioned to me perhaps dragons.
Dragons. This is a year like of the dragon. And my kids are super fascinated with dragons. So am I. Yeah, that could be a great starting point.
Okay. Before I connect for you, I'm going to show you, I'll show you the connection. But before I do that, I have to tell you that I was walking through Porto, you know, which is the city that is hundreds of years old here where I live. And it's the Porto Museum, the building that houses the Porto Museum. I don't know how old that building is, but it must be a couple of hundred years old. And the facade of it, at the top of the building, is a dragon and a unicorn holding up a crown. And on the top of the crown is a griffin.
Mm-hmm.
I actually took a photograph of it. I'll send it to you. I don't know if you can show it, but what a strange thing to find in this ancient city. And interestingly enough, Porto is also a city where a fair amount of Harry Potter was filmed.
Oh.
The library is a bookstore, the library from Harry Potter that has that big, I think it also, they have it, I can't think of the location, but it is a bookstore here in Porto. You actually have to pay to go into the bookstore now because so many people just want to go in and see it, right? Unless you buy a book. But it's unbelievable. There's an enormous dragon consciousness here in this part of Portugal.
Oh, wow.
It's huge. Yeah. You'll find sort of those filigree metal streetlights. Mm-hmm. And they're these old sort of school lanterns. And the post that it is suspended from is a dragon coming out of the wall that you'll find in the streets. It's fascinating. I'm fascinated by the stuff I see here. Okay, let me not digress. Let me channel for you. Okay, so I'm going to take a moment to connect. To do that, I close my eyes. Once I'm connected, I actually open my eyes. I don't go into deep trance. I don't find it necessary to go into trance in order to perceive, hear, understand, and engage the consciousness of a higher being. Okay, so please give me a moment. Okay, so the being that has connected to me very quickly is Archangel Michael. Michael is greeting us, saying that there is joy and light in this communication and a lot of love. They are greeting you specifically, Derek, and saying to you, "Greetings, son, we welcome you to our realm." They're also thanking us. So Michael is saying that he is aware that we wish to know more about dragons, and he's going to share that information with us. Michael is saying that this is a realm, it is not a fantasy, it is not a children's story, but rather it is a dimension which exists in the multifaceted universe in which we find ourselves dwelling. The dragon realm is not really a place of fantasy nor of peace, as these are historical forms and beings who experience themselves in the dragonite state. In this state, they are large-bodied and they are governed by the fire element. They're very reduced ancestors would be the salamanders and the lizards of our world. They are highly intelligent and highly sensitive beings who are extremely maternal in their relationship with their young. However, contrary to popular belief, once the dragon eggs have hatched, it is the patriarch, the masculine, the father, you could say, who would raise the young, teaching them the art of hunting and of self-preservation. the female dragon will pass from that realm after she has birthed a maximum of 6 eggs. It is not possible for her to energetically produce more. The seers of ancient times had a conscious and interactive relationship with the dragon realm, as they did with many other realms, including the realms of the elementals, the ones that we as humans would refer to as fairies. The seers experienced great power through their engagement with the consciousness of the beings from this dimension, keeping in mind that the dimensions themselves are pure energy, and although they are highly sophisticatedly structured environments, they are in fact pure frequency. They are non-physical environments. The seers were suitably expanded in their consciousness and were able to travel to the dimensions mentioned. And when appearing, for example, in the realms of the dragons, they would appear in dragon bodies. Their human form was reserved for their human environment. And so it was through their exchange of information, through the intelligence they carried into the dragon realms and the intelligence displayed by the beings who dwell there, that the power of the dragon was transmitted to the seers of old, as was the wisdom. It is a place of fury and beauty. A place worth visiting. I believe you have another question, Derek, that you want to ask.
Well, I'm wondering if it's possible for the Earth human realm to somehow match frequencies with the dragon realm and to have dragons physically here on the planet?
Not in the way you ascribe it, and Michael will explain. That is a non-physical reality. The Earth vibration is extremely dense, and it is physical. The veils exist between the dimensions for a reason. It would literally blow the minds of many physical humans to experience other dimensions literally, in a physical sense. And so it is to preserve the mental state, the mind energy. However, a human being is an extraordinary being, for they are able to leave their physical state at will and travel interdimensionally. The dragons may visit the earth realm only in energy form and by accident. for them to reduce or to alter their vibration to appear in a physical state is an anomaly which is unlikely. However, a human being can travel consciously, interdimensionally, and take forms in other worlds. This is one of the great blessings bestowed on the human experience. It requires a certain amount of training, belief, and desire, but it is absolutely attainable. It is more realistic that the human can visit the dragon realm and not the dragons visiting the human.
Understood. Boy, if we've got Archangel Michael here, is there anything that he wants to tell me or inform me of directly while I've got him on the line?
He says that you worry too much about things that are out of your control.
Hmm.
The greatest gift you can bring to yourself is to trust yourself, your path, and your light. These three things are intertwined, and it is true for all humans. It is not possible to trust the path without trusting the source of light and without trusting self. The three are intertwined. Walk in trust and much of the burden will fall away.
Hmm. Thank you.
I would say to all who are listening to remember it is the frequency of abundance that emanates from the earth. And it is there that one should turn to find the richnesses that humans desire and require to experience fulfilled and balanced lives. Sun, your light is vast and shines from you. It is clear to any who see you.
Thank you.
And it is beautiful to behold.
Oh. Oh, thanks.
Okay, Derek, Michael is saying that he is going to take his leave, if that is okay. He says that the channel tires.
All right.
Doesn't take you.
Well, thank you.
He says that you must be at peace and remember that you are loved in this dimension and in others.
Hmm.
He says to explore, enjoy, and become. He's going to disconnect from me now. A moment, please. And there he's gone. It's interesting. At times I could feel that he completely takes over my body. It's not something he would normally do, but perhaps for the purpose of today, it was pertinent. I don't know.
Wonderful. Thank you for that.
No, you're welcome.
Is that
I
something
hope it had value.
that does tire you physically?
No, not really. It's probably just because it's quite late here in the evening, and it's been quite a long day. But no, it's generally quite mentally stimulating. So channels have to ground all of that incredible energy that they bring in. And so in my case, there are two things that help to ground the energy from channeling. The one is cats. Meow, cats.
Yep.
And the other is exercise, physical exercise. So I remember meeting a channel years ago, who was a very famous channel, actually, in Istanbul in Turkey. And at that stage, she was in her mid-80s, and she was unable to move around easily. So exercise was difficult for her. And she indicated that she had over 30 cats because they would take the psychic energy and they would ground it for her. For myself personally, I have limited cats and a lot of physical exercise to ground it, you know. It's that otherwise you will lie awake at night like, you know, buzzing with energy.
It's so funny. I just realized this maybe yesterday. I was talking about this, that, you know, we have a cat that will like go out and come in and go out and come in. And it's this cat is taking out energy to ground, but it doesn't have a huge carrying capacity. So it has to make multiple trips. And I just realized for the first time, like that it was doing its, you know, grounding duties, but had to do it over and over again.
Yeah, cats are amazing. Animals are amazing. Cats are very special to my heart.
Well, since it is late, maybe we should think about wrapping it up. But because it is the equinox, I wanted to see if there's anything you wanted to say about that. If there's significance.
Well, change of season, right? We have a full moon this week as well. Yay. I think the seasonal changes, I think, are very obvious in the Northern Hemisphere. In the Southern Hemisphere, certainly in South Africa, you don't really have seasonal changes in the sense that you go from winter, you have about 4 days of spring, and then you're in flat out summer. Then you have about a week of autumn, and then you're deep into winter, you know. So these in-between seasons don't really exist, but we're very aware of them. However, what I've noticed up north in the Northern Hemisphere is that the seasons literally, I mean, it's literally yesterday it got warm in Europe, and it has been chilly. And I was like, this is crazy. You know what? When is spring coming? Because in Africa, we would have been already experiencing the cold sort of coming in at this time of the year. Although I believe that they're sitting in a heat wave, which I think is probably important, that the seasonal changes and the impact of the into the environment as the world shifts and alters, and you know, the whole sort of, sorry, I'm not making a lot of sense. that it's the seasons are often not as clear as they were, you know, and I think we're going to see more of that happening. However, the equinoxes and the solstices are important not only from a change of season perspective, but also from the energies that shift and change. So we spoke about this equinox now at this time of the year being about water. And the solstice that comes mid-June is about air. And the one, the equinox that happens in September is about earth. And the solstice that happens in December is about fire. So the movement astrologically is aligned with the seasons as well as the equinoxes and the elements. So if you look at the astrological signs, for example, at this time of the year, you've got Pisces. We're sitting with Pisces in March, and Pisces is water, and so on. And that's why, for example, Sagittarius in December is your fire, and so on. So the astrological signs are superimposed over this. So as time passes and we see perhaps less of the actual seasonal changes taking place, it's relevant for us to recognize that it's not just about the seasons, it's also about the elements, and to pay homage, to give our respects to the elements at different times of the year, because they play such a pivotal role in our physical well-being and in the well-being of our world, you know? So I guess that's what I was trying to say very badly.
Yeah, I think you're just using it as another marker to tune into with the elements. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, perfect. And then where my mind went straight away was how can I do that with my kids? So that kind of brings us back to taking these practices and
to the kids.
Yep, figuring out
small ceremonies you can do with them to honor that element, bringing the element's consciousness in, candles of that color, you know, associated with the color of the element, all sorts of bits and pieces you can bring in, do. Ask your children what water means to them and how they would like it represented in a ceremony. You know, I'm sure they've got great ideas and I'm sure they'll tell you. Probably swimming at the beach, Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Less ceremony, more fun. Yeah, that's another big element of the water element is the inner child and our playfulness. The water bubbles and it flows and it moves and it dances and it's a very playful element, water. So the inner child and our emotional well-being that sits or is accessed, governed, filtered is the word, through the inner child is also very much water-based. Mm-hmm. So it all kind of eventually fits together, you know? It's quite amazing, all the pieces of the puzzle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Derek, are you planning more children's metaphysics classes, applied metaphysics for kids?
Yeah, I'm open to it. I mean, I did this because I kept being invited to.
Yes.
And so I, you know, just show up and be of service. But a lot of people are saying, you should, you know, once you've done that, teach my kids online. So, I don't have a specific plan, but I'm
like
aware
an
that
ongoing
it's
program.
That it's maybe, yeah. Whatever, however I'm needed, I'll show up for.
Yeah, podcasts for kids. There you go. Actual educational ones.
Yeah, or just like, yeah, that's a great idea. Because we listen to a lot of kids' storytelling podcasts. So we could just do some
good
spiritual kids' storytelling, maybe. That could be cool.
I'd love it. I'm looking forward to getting a link to the first Applied Metaphysics podcast for children. Yay!
Yeah, I love that idea.
It would be amazing.
Super.
Yeah, I think the future spirituality definitely is a combination of nature and technology. And we have to bring the two together. We have to find a way to link it so that it is user-friendly and nothing is lost and we get to use the best of both areas, right? It would be amazing. So, yeah, Applied Metaphysics and Elements for Children online.
We'll just have to talk. We'll have to talk more about that.
sure.
Is there?
All right. Good.
Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you want to make sure to mention? And also, where can people find you online?
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, funny, the first thing that popped into my mind, there are so many things. We could chat like this every day for months, and we'd never get through all the things we need to talk about, right? I think what I'd like to do is invite people to, I have a free full moon meditation every month, which is available on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. And I think the benefit of that is amazing because meditation is just so important. So to encourage people to meditate, I offer that. I have a link tree that has Facebook and YouTube and Instagram and website. I think I've mentioned everything. But they can just look for me there if they'd like to. I offer individual consultations to adults. I don't actually teach children directly. I train teachers to teach children. I wish I had the time to teach kids because they're just extraordinary. I'd rather spend my time with children, animals, and trees, but the adults need help more, right? So I do individual consultations and I do a lot of training. I teach applied metaphysics to adults and teach people how to develop their intuition, how to channel, train healers. There's so many different things. So yeah, they can just have a look and see if anything interests them.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well,
so thank you, Derek. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. It was lovely meeting you. You have such a beautiful vibe and I love your energy. And I'm sure that any child that comes into contact with you is just going to benefit and flourish from what you have to share with them. So thank you very much for connecting, for finding me.
Yeah. Wow. Yay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. And it was a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you.